Hello and welcome to the Impact Podcast from us at Impact Wales. We're Finn and Jane and every week we'll be bringing you lots of discussion, comments and opinion on everything research and education. We'll be talking professional learning, what's happening in the education world and everything in between to help you make a difference in your school.
Hello Jane.
Hello Finn. We are back with the Impact Podcast for episode 67 today.
Yep, episode 67. And what we're going to be talking about today is a bit meta. We're asking the question, what's with all the questions?
I know. Well, we'll just put this into some sort of context. I've been out of the office all morning. I came in just before lunchtime and you just bombarded me with the focus for the podcast this afternoon. So it's just sort of thrown me a little bit.
Yeah.
But it fits in very, very well with some of the conversations we've been having over the last couple of weeks about where professional learning is going.
And yes. So the podcast today is really about professional learning and where it sits in what we know about learning, because it's just one form of learning. Yeah. So, and we do know quite a lot about how learning happens, how it works, and we're asking some questions about what are we doing with professional learning and is it the right thing in terms of the use of questions. It will become apparent why we're doing that. But I wanted to start with where we were yesterday, because that was quite a day for us, wasn't it?
It was a fantastic day.
It was.
Yeah. Because we've done lots and lots of support with schools online over the last 24 months, really, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But yesterday we had the privilege that one of our primary schools we've been working with, they very sensibly have blocked 3 in-sit days together.
Yeah.
And we were working face to face yesterday for the first time in, but we did a couple of schools back in the autumn term, didn't we? Yeah. But they weren't, I think one was all staff.
Yes.
I can't remember. One was all staff, wasn't it? Yeah. And others have been smaller groups.
But this was all staff. We were in there. We were doing what we used to do,
yeah,
which is standing up in front of an audience and doing.
Yeah. And we're going back tomorrow as well.
Yeah. And doing a presentation, which, you know, I was just thinking about it. I was thinking that, you don't know how much things have changed until you have to go back and do what you did before. And I had this problem yesterday, and it was really quite funny because I never expected it to happen. But when you deliver a presentation on Teams, you've got a grid view of all of your slides, which is great because, you know, if you're on slide 5 and you want to show them slide 10, you just can click straight to it.
You just got so used to a different way of working.
Oh, I know. And yesterday I wanted to show, you know, like slide 10 and click through it. I had to literally go clicking through it. And it's just little things like that.
But it was also very different in the fact that the teaching staff were obviously trying to keep their bubbles as tight as possible. Mm. So while they were sitting and participating, they all had masks on.
Yeah.
But to deliver to a room full, and it must be, this is what you're like in the classroom, you talk to pupils.
Yeah.
How difficult it is to read people
as
a group, particularly when they've got a mask on.
But having said that, how much more information we got from being physically in a room with people as opposed to being online. I think that when you're online, you place an extra premium on the responses that you get in the chat, and having to physically ask for further information, whereas you don't have to do that when you're in the room. It's just much more immediate. You can just see whether someone's happy or sad about something.
It was
something.
More spontaneous yesterday as well, wasn't it? It was really nice to go back in a way to the way it was, and we ended up being more of our double act that we usually are when we're face to face, which you don't, it's not quite as easy to do online.
It's a little bit, and that's what I was going to say actually, that I think that over the last, you know, 18-20 months, however long it is, I think what we've done is we've recognized all of those things that you get face to face, and we have created explicit structures, explicit actions in order to replace the things that are missing when you're remote. And it, you know, it makes you realize how much work we've done and how far we've come, that we can carry out a session like the one we did yesterday, but we can do it online, and it is just as effective, but in a much more explicit structure.
Yeah. And having to swap now this afternoon after we've done this podcast, we're doing another school this afternoon.
Back in remote,
but this time in Scotland. So,
there is a benefit to that. So anyway, that's by the by. So today we're talking about questions, and something that we noticed, that Jane and I have noticed,
It seems to be, we're either noticing it more or it's becoming increasingly more common.
I think it's the second option. I think it's becoming increasingly more common that when professional learning supports, documents, resources are shared online in Wales, particularly. I'm not seeing quite so much in other countries, but
we're not looking in as much detail.
You're right. When those professional learning resources are shared, they seem to have a huge amount of questions in them. If not, in some cases,
that's all it is.
They are just questions. For example, and these are just the few that we've picked out recently, but there are, I'm sure, lots of others where there are examples of this. The National Evaluation and Improvement Resource, which is that it's described as a toolkit to help teachers, senior leaders in school, carry out the self-evaluation process. The toolkit part of it, the support,
the spreadsheet
is 107 questions. And I was really, really sad. I did go through every single one of those 107, checking whether they were part of question mark to see if some of them were statements or were examples. But no, they are all questions.
But there's also the ESTIN, the Curriculum for Wales Primary Development Toolkit. Again, that's made up of 47 questions.
And it's entirely questions. I think there is one where it has bullet points that are statements and there are examples, but that's actually examples of where things go wrong as opposed to examples of good practice. Then we've got the Schools of Learning Organisations survey.
Yeah, that's just questions.
Yeah.
And then we've got the MPEP,
National Professional Inquiry Project.
And there's, again, a whole raft of questions.
Well, that's kind of, there. That whole project is basically supported question asking, isn't it? It's just about supporting teachers to ask
those questions.
So how is it that we've got to a point where professional learning seems to be, you know, accessing questions? What does it look like when you or, you know, I'm a teacher in a school, or I'm a head teacher in a school, and I know that there's a problem with classroom practice. I know that I've got a problem with the quality of instruction in my school.
Mm.
So if I used the evaluation and improvement resource, I might go to that and I might say, right, well, I need to improve the pedagogy. So I'll look at the pedagogy section and it might say, how well does leadership develop the pedagogy within your school?
That's not going to help you very much, is it?
No, it's not. So because just to kind of take a moment and say, well, let's look at what questions do. What are questions? What's the psychology of questions? The person who's asking the question controls the situation.
But the person asking the question has got a clear idea of the direction they want this to go in as well.
So if Estin are asking the question, for example, how well does leadership support progression within your classroom? At some point, it might not be now, but at some point you're going to know that they've got an answer for that question, because questions demand an answer. If you're asking it, it's got to be answered. So Estin will have the answer to that. If they haven't got it now, they'll have it by the time they've inspected 100 schools. They will have an answer, a standard to which they'll then hold everybody to.
But when we're using, as a teacher, questioning within the classroom, the sole purpose or the main purpose of using questioning is to elicit understanding. You know, what is the understanding of your pupils? And not so much understanding, but the learning.
Yeah.
Let's elicit that learning, get the idea of what they've learned during that session.
Yeah, so it's after the fact. So you ask a question when you know or you suspect that learning has already happened.
That seems to be missing, isn't it?
Yeah, and if we just think about what that means for professional learning, is what you're saying, by providing you with all these questions, we are assuming that you, as a teacher, have already got the answer. But me as a teacher, I actually might be going to those resources not having an answer, and I want them to provide an answer, which is where we get this situation where teachers say, just give me an answer, just give me an answer. Yeah. And
because they've got nothing to draw it from.
Yeah, and government or middle tier say, well, look, here's your resource, here's your in quote unquote answer, but it's a question.
You answer a question with another question.
Yeah, and going back to what you were saying about what purpose questioning has within the learning process, you use it to work out how much learning has mm-hmm. taken place, but you also use it to encourage elaboration or to deepen the learning that's already happened, to make those additional connections. But again, this is after the fact. Yeah. This is after some learning has happened. You want that learning to be widened, broadened, deepened. Mm. So you ask questions.
So the element, we've mentioned this in previous podcasts, haven't we, about professional learning.
Yeah.
That the learning element, again, seems to be missing.
Yeah. It used to be that it was called CPD everywhere. It was, you know, continuing professional development. And it used to be that it was called training, or that it was called, you know, in-service training.
Yeah.
And I think that by changing it to professional learning, it almost feels like there's something that redefinition as professional learning has meant that it's only one type of learning, that it's discovery learning, that it's, you know, the purpose of questions for the professional learner. So, you know, if I were to, I'm looking at my own practice and I'm thinking, okay, I want to learn something about my own practice, and I start with a question, I am exploring, aren't I?
But you're exploring based on what previous knowledge you've already got.
Yeah, and it's that process of discovery. And if we relate that back to what we know about the learning process, is that if you're discovering or exploring and you don't have a foundational knowledge to base that on, or you don't have any kind of practices or routines or strategies that you can draw on for that, it's just aimless discovery. Yeah. Exploration.
It's not enabling you to take you down the direction, down the route that you really want it to take you to get to that point, is it?
And this brings us to something that we were looking at today. We're members of BERA, the British Educational Research Association, and we get their journal on a monthly basis. And there was a really interesting, I'm still playing my way through it. It is pretty academic, but there was a really interesting article in there by Jim Horden from Bath University, talking about the editorial, actually, by Biester and Aldridge, was talking about the links between educational research and practice, whether it's about having close to practice research carried out by educational researchers, or whether it is about making education more evidence informed. And whether research is about education, so it's descriptive, but effectively created by outsiders, or whether it is for education. So being for education means directly to improve practices. And that requires, as Jim Borden was talking about in his article, that you have to have that real understanding, not only of what practice you're carrying out, but how the pupils are responding to it, and the difference that those responses might be on a different day with a different set of pupils, that unless you've actually got that experience of process and outcome, can you really make judgments about what is in quote unquote best or not?
Because some of that practice as well is very intuitive, isn't it? And it's something, some of those things that as a practitioner, as an expert practitioner, you do without necessarily thinking about why you do them.
Yes. And you know what? It's so often, and I know we do it a lot when we're working with teachers remotely or in person, is that we'll know that something's not quite right and we'll adjust our practice as a response to that. This is not quite right. Because I had a conversation with a member of staff yesterday about learning objectives. And we were just talking about what should be in a learning objective and what shouldn't be in a learning objective. And I knew as I was talking to her that there was a question in there, or there was a I'm not sure about this in there. And I couldn't work out what it was. And it was only afterwards I'd realized that it was to do with who the learning objective was for, whether it was for the teacher or whether it was for accountability purposes. But I adjusted my practice during that conversation in order to address the intuition I had that there was something wrong. And I think that teachers do that all the time. They know if they ask a question, they don't quite get the response that they're expecting, they'll immediately adjust their practice.
But it's whether somebody observing that or from the side would actually notice that and appreciate the nuances within that.
Yeah. So going back to our original idea about questions in professional learning, is that if you're providing professional learning, it really needs to be professional learning that actually enables teachers to make a difference.
Mm.
And discovery is something that you only really are able to do once you've got this wealth of experience behind you and you know where to look. Yeah.
But you've got to be able to build it on your own experiences as well, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I'm just thinking about where were we, was it this afternoon when we were talking about the cake analogy again? You know, the, it is. There's a school that we're talking about this afternoon.
Oh, we are. Yes, we are. Yeah,
in Scotland.
Yeah, we are.
And they are looking at professional inquiry,
yeah,
because they know that they want to improve the quality of teaching and learning in their school. They want to improve pedagogy. So they decided that they wanted to do professional inquiry. And one of their questions to us that we're going to talk about this afternoon is, how can we ensure that everybody is able to choose the right thing that needs to be fixed? Yeah. As their professional inquiry. And we are going to be talking about the cake analogy, the bake-off analogy. We're saying to them, are all your teachers Paul Hollywood? It is Paul Hollywood, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, okay, I got the name right, because I don't watch Bake Off. But can you have your teachers got the level of expertise that is required to take one bite of the educational cake and know what's wrong?
Because I think we found working with some other schools on professional inquiry, it's about some practitioners choose the question of the thing that they're the most interested in,
yeah,
but not necessarily the thing that the one question that would make the most difference to their practice and to the learning in the classroom. Sometimes they're two very different things. So it's about how we can support a school to actually empower their staff to making those right decisions.
To transcend their current understanding into new understanding, because you do, you get caught on the same rut.
Mm.
You get caught on the same track and you look at your class and you look at your teaching and you think, oh, that's happened again. And you blame whatever it is that has always blamed. But if you're not improving, then maybe it's having additional expertise allows you to break out of that rut.
I mean, because teaching is quite an involved science, really, isn't it? There's so many factors that can change the outcomes.
Yes.
And you can do, you know, one activity or one element of pedagogy with one class and it would, you know, hit the money. But you can do that with another class, very similar.
Falls flat.
And it falls flat. So it's...
Because there are so many variables going on.
But it's being an expert practitioner to recognise that this isn't working because there's X, Y, and Z affecting this.
I do think that the whole cake analogy works really, really well, because if you think about it,
cake.
I know, but I love cake and I can't even eat it. But you know, the whole cake thing where you're thinking about, it's not just a question of the different ingredients that you put in, but it's the how you combine those ingredients as they're going in, what order you put them in, how they interact with each other, then what happens to them all when you heat them all up. All of those things is very like teaching, because you know, the order in which you do things, the way in which the children interact to each other whilst the teaching is going on, all of those really complicated, complex responses to teaching. Because teaching is never, I'm going to stand at the front and deliver it and I'll get a response and that'll be that.
But it's like when you've made that cake, when you're the expert cake maker and for some reason that cake doesn't rise or it falls flat, that's when you start to ask the questions.
Yes.
and you start to question based on your previous knowledge.
Yes, and it is that, it is your previous knowledge. And when we're talking about improving practice, improving what's happening in schools, a question is not going to cut it.
No.
Further exploration, because I think if you talk to most teachers, I can't imagine, I've spoken to a single teacher who I've asked the question of, what's going wrong in your classroom? And they haven't been able to instantly say, I've got a problem with this. They know, you know instantly when there's a problem, because it's actually painful for you.
Yeah.
Because it stops things. And I know personally, it's the kind of thing that keeps me awake at night. You know, if you've got a particular class that you just can't seem to...
It just don't gel, or you can't just seem to get them to move forward.
Yeah, or yeah. They're having a particular problem with a particular thing and you just can't seem to make a difference. It does keep you awake at night. Mm-hmm. So it's not that teachers don't know what is the kind of the tipping point or the crux of the issue. They just don't know what to try.
Mm.
And I think that it's not knowing what to try by saying, well, just ask yourself a question about that thing, that's not what's going to make the biggest difference. It's being exposed to the knowledge that might give you an answer, as opposed to just asking yourself continual questions. And I think that going back to our original what's with all the questions is that, are we in a situation where we've actually got professional learning that's not professional learning?
Well, this is certainly the conversation that we've had before, isn't it? It's thinking about, if we are just setting out lots of questions for people to discuss and think about, if we haven't got that clear knowledge base for them to base that on, and we're talking about, you know, we're in this huge curriculum redesign phase at the moment. If we haven't got curriculum redesign skills or an understanding of the different elements of curriculum that you need to be thinking about, then to take that step to straight to the questions, we're missing out a huge, our foundations aren't secure.
Absolutely. And I think that if we're in a situation where Welsh Government have quite clearly stated that we want education to be more evidence-informed, they want teachers to be more well-informed about best bets in research and be able to use them in their classroom, then what are we actually doing about that? Are we increasing the capacity for research about education, or are we increasing the capacity for research for education? And, you know,
two research, very different things, aren't they?
Very, very different things. So do we want teachers to be exploring and discovering and trying to answer questions, or through their own endeavours, or do we want to provide teachers with potential answers based on the research that's already out there? For them to use their own experience to actually try out and see what works for them.
Well, we're talking about learning. We could take this right back to learning in the classroom and supplant what you've just said with pupils. Do we want pupils to be exploring, discovering, trying to answer questions about learning through their own endeavours? Or do we want to provide them?
Yeah.
And then give them that balance between the two.
Well, and this is it. You know, when you were saying, just then you were saying, do we want children to be exploring? Yes, of course we want children to be exploring. And yes, of course we want teachers to be exploring, but not without any knowledge at all, aimlessly, you know, or fruitlessly down dead ends. We want that inquiry, that discovery, that exploring to be purposeful, to be supported, fully supported. And I think that there's a clear discussion happening in classroom learning, where we understand that discovery or inquiry learning is not this kind of aimless, purposeless approach, that there is often a very structured way of doing it and there is a place for it in the learning trajectory. But I don't think we're having that conversation effectively enough about professional learning. On when discovery learning is appropriate in professional learning and when it isn't. And I think that...
And bearing in mind the time scale that we're working at as well, it needs to be as efficient as possible.
Yeah, because with the best will in the world, if we were doing this in an ideal world where, you know, time and money wasn't an issue, then maybe this would actually be a nice way to engage everyone and say, well, look, just let's just have a go. And then, oh, okay, so we're just aimless about this. So let's put a little bit of structure on it. But we've got a very clear timeline that's been set by government. So if they're setting this timeline, they want it done by September of 2022, 22 weeks away, then they have to create a system and a process that's going to work for that timeline. Otherwise, they're only doing half of the job. And whilst I'm having a bit of a rant.
You're on a bit of a ranty day.
It's just, I get quite frustrated about the fact that we have a set of policymakers who are talking about the importance of research and how that must underpin everything, and how they want the profession to be more research informed, and they want the capacity of research more generally in Wales to be increased. And yet there is research coming out from Education Endowment Foundation about highly effective professional learning that seems to be completely ignored. We don't have professional learning that is using any of the mechanisms identified in that report. And that just blows me away. So how can you say we want to be research informed and
let's not use it in our professional learning?
So, you know, if we were, rather than just sitting here having a whinge, if we were to have
Education Minister.
Yeah, well, okay. Yes, I'll take on that one now. If we were in a situation where we had professional learning in Wales or anywhere that moved away from this over-reliance on discovery learning as professional learning, and it was using the mechanisms of highly effective professional learning based in research, what would that look like?
Well, it's also thinking about what our teachers actually need. So it's thinking about, we've spoken to so many teachers that there just isn't enough answers, or there isn't enough examples. You know, we always talked to them when we're looking at the quality of instruction, giving worked examples.
Yeah,
you know, that's got to form part of what professional learning
teachers intuitively know what's missing. And there's this constant refrain, we just want answers. Don't get us to ask questions, just give us some answers, because they want a worked example. They want to learn through imitation. They want to see what a good one or even what a bad one looks like, and have that discussion of what strategies can they use. Yeah.
But it's the old phrase, isn't it? Learning is learning, whether it's pupils in the classroom or is it teachers.
Yeah.
We still need to employ the same pedagogy and the same strategies for learning, whether it's
our
professional
brains still
learning.
Work the same. So the first step would be to build knowledge. You know, building something, a foundational base of, first step principles that can then be used and deepened through that subsequent question asking. But I think that, for example, if they really want to develop self-evaluation, then they need to actually give a worked example of what a really excellent self-evaluation looks like. I tell you what, that would be so quick. That could then be refined later on, but it would be so quick if you showed a school, right, this self-evaluation of this school with this outcome, and then this self-evaluation of this school
give a model about how a school has done it.
Rather than a case study. Case study's not the same.
No.
Because a case study leaves out those bits about
the thought process, isn't it?
So it's not live modelling. It's not my thinking process during this and the challenges that I faced and how they overcame them. It's not that detailed. It's just that kind of gloss over it's done. And we might have done one or two things during that. But I think we have to remember that teachers are people. Teachers need physical support as well. Yeah,
particularly now.
Yeah.
With everything else. Well, we were talking yesterday, weren't we, about, we're talking about curriculum redesign on top of the normal, stressful day-to-day job.
Yeah. Teachers need support to maintain motivation. One of the things about the job that I always found really, really difficult was, you'd had a very stressful day, let's say, you'd been maybe doing lunchtime duty, break duty, you turned up early to mark some books before you started school. You basically hadn't been to the toilet all day because you know, you just didn't have time for it. And it comes to 3:30 and then you think, what am I going to do tomorrow? And I've got three sets of books to look at as well. Mm. And doing anything on top of that, you know, just motivating yourself to, I don't know, go out for a walk or cook tea as opposed to getting a takeaway, or, you know, it's motivating yourself to do that extra bit. It's really hard.
It is. And particularly now when you think of the situation that, you know, I don't know how many schools are actually being able to use the staff room.
Yeah.
You know,
have those conversations.
Staff being able to meet together in, you know, slightly bigger groups rather than the person in across the corridor.
Mm.
To have that social element to it all as well, because it is about, you know, it's teaching can be so isolating, particularly when you've got to keep your bubble and keep your distance.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we are talking about questions and questioning and exploring, if you've got no one to talk things through, then it just makes it even more isolating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the questions that we've seen that are have been provided as professional learning in the evaluation improvement record, in the ESTIN primary development toolkit, I know that these are questions that have been developed through conversations with practitioners, but that's not quite the same as actually rooting them in some research evidence as well. Mm. And I think that, you know, a collaborative self-improving system is not quite as credible as a collaborative self-improving system that uses research to underpin their choices. That it's not just one or the other, that it is both working together and having that credible source of information that you then translate into practice. I think that's really and really important, and it's something the EEF report on professional learning, which is well worth a read, go and have a look. We'll put the link in the show notes for that.
But we've talked as well about focusing on what the teachers actually need, so the modelling and monitoring feedback, all of that as well. More importantly as well, rehearsal. We talked rehearsal of their learning in a safe space.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, teachers need to have that time to try things out.
Yeah.
But not to be judged on it, and not to have
and
accountability.
And that not being judged on it means, I remember when interactive whiteboards came in for the first time and having to use them in classes with pupils sitting there, and when things were going wrong and the stress that involved. So it's as simple as having, you know, being able to sit there with your peers and try something out and just talk about it. Or it means not having the looming external monitoring of ESTIN or Ofsted or whoever it is coming in to judge what you're doing. It is having that opportunity for guided practice where judgment is not part of it, where feedback and improvement is part of the process. So there's so much more to professional learning and, dare I say, in quote unquote, toolkits. You know, toolkits, it'd be really interesting. I just get this idea of a toolkit. Just imagine a professional learning toolkit where you open up the toolbox and you look inside and all you find is a load of questions. How might you undo that nut?
Yeah.
Or, you know, what's the process
that's
for
professional learning, is it?
Well, it's not, you know, rather than finding spanners and screwdrivers and hammers and what have you, you're just finding, you know, what might a good tool for this look like?
I'm not sure which one.
Well, just provide me with the tool. I just want a spanner. Should we end the podcast on that?
I think we should.
Okay, so what we're saying is we agree with teachers that the questions are not an effective way of moving forward. It's answers.
They need more.
Well, answers is the starting point, and then we can go back to the questions. So teachers want more answers. So somebody needs to hear this and do something about it. And we hope they do soon, because we feel for you out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so see you next time.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to make sure you don't miss future episodes. You can find us online at www.impact.wales. You can also follow us on social media. On Twitter, we're at Impact Wales. On Facebook and Instagram, search for Impact Wales. And on LinkedIn, search for Impact School Improvement.